This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscowain. If you like world team tennis and you live in the Philadelphia area, you can watch the Philadelphia Freedoms play from mid to late July at the Pavilion at Villanova University. Their first away game of the season is July 6th. Our guest is the owner of the Philadelphia Freedoms and co-founder of World Team Tennis, tennis great Billie Jean King. She picked up her first tennis racket when she was in fifth grade and went on to have an extraordinary career, winning 39 Grand Slams. She's been an activist and an advocate for equality in sports and was a leader in the fight for pay equity in tennis. She has received many awards and honors, including the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2009. Billie Jean King joins us on Radio Times to talk about world team tennis, her career playing tennis, and her work as a pioneer for social justice. A great pleasure, Billie Jean King, to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Oh, thank you, Marty. Nice introduction, by the way.
Well, thank you very much. I'm always super-duper careful when you're introducing someone who's sitting right across from you.
You got it right.
But I have to say, I did not realize, and this is where my ignorance will show, that you have been the owner of the Philadelphia Freedoms for, what, 30 years?
No.
No.
I've only been owner maybe... Gosh, that's a good question. 10, maybe?
Oh, okay.
Because Philadelphia Freedoms actually only played one season, then it went away because in 74, I don't know if, you know, those of us are old enough will remember that real estate was in bad shape. I think inflation was at 17%, and the owner, Dick Butera, was a developer of real estate, and he said, I can't do it next year. Things aren't good. For instance, he had stuff at Hilton Head, and the whole island went bankrupt.
You know?
The whole island. I wish I could have bought. I wanted to buy. They said, no, right now everything's on hold. And I go, whoa, now that would have been a great investment. But it was tough. But then I went to play for New York. And then I wanted to bring the Philadelphia Freedoms back. Because every time I talked to Elton, he'd say.
Elton John.
Yes, Elton John. He wrote Philadelphia Freedom for me and for the team and for the people of Philadelphia, really. So I said, I'm trying. So we finally got it back. It's 15 years old total. So it's 14 years coming back. So it's 15 years if you count 74 and now. So we've been going for quite a while now.
Indeed.
And it's really good. It's been fantastic. And I love owning the team. When I played in 74, as I was watching, I had to think about, I'm going to own this team someday.
And now you do.
Yes.
What makes you, though, so enthusiastic about the idea of team tennis, and it's a unique way of playing, I guess, a playing tournaments.
Well, it's very different from tournaments because you're just not on your own.
Yeah,
and it's really a team sport. We have five sets, and every game counts because it's cumulative scoring. So even if you and I were playing women's doubles, Marty, let's say we lost, we only go to five. We don't go to six. Let's say we lost 5-3. Our three still counts. So every game counts. Also, there's a bonus system at the end for individual money and team money. It's based on percentage of games won over the entire season. It gets down to usually one. You cannot believe the percentage points difference. It can be like 0.05% difference or one game difference. And that's the difference. And the check's much bigger, you know, if you're at number one versus two and two versus three, et cetera. So it's a constant incentive to do your best. But most of the time, pro athletes just want to play. They want to win for their team. They want to win for their community. It's like playing for the Sixers. It's like playing for the Eagles. You want to win for your fans. And we feel the same way. We're very involved in the community. We're helping out with Hunting Park.
Yeah, in fact, you have new courts in Hunting
new
Park.
New court. We're the ones that put that in because we have a multicolored courts. The kids love them. I said, don't tell the kids where to go. Let's see where they go. They went right to our courts. I said, that's good. That's
what colors?
They're red, blue. Let's see, red, blue. They're primary green.
Oh,
so
nice.
They're primary colors, and the kids are very attracted. And if you're watching, if you're turning the dial of surfing, you'll know as soon as you see our court that's what we are, World Team Tennis. Otherwise, you kind of go, okay, where is this? I have to look for the name of the city or something. And it drives me crazy. So I said, well, at least branding-wise, it'll be very easy to know who we are.
And World Team Tennis matches, so they consist of five sets with one set of men's singles, one set of women's singles, a set of men's doubles, women's doubles, and then mixed doubles.
Correct. So 60% of the scoring efforts in doubles.
Right.
But also, it keeps moving. Everything's by one point. It's no ads. Not this.
You don't like ads?
No, I don't like it because what happens one game, if you go back and forth, it can take a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it ruins the schedule. I think people want to see more players. I do anyway. And I've talked to people. With us, you're seeing at least eight players every night. which I think is important. And also you get to know our players, because in tournament tennis, after the first round, 50% of the players are gone, 75% after the second round. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. I like it. You get up the next day, you lost last night or the night before, and you get up and you get to go out there, and it's a way to develop your game. I think for the young players particularly, like we have Vicky Duvall on the team, it's invaluable to her because she's, first of all, around everyone that can hit with her. We have Josh Cohen as our coach. Lisa Raymond's going to be at all the home matches. She's now our director of player personnel. And, of course, Lisa's a local kid from Philly and still Indeed. Lives here, just built a new home. I mean, she's here for life, which is great. And I met her when she was 12, and she just loves Philadelphia. And so we're so happy that she's going to be part of the front office as well, because she's still on the tour. And she's playing with Liesl Huber, who actually is going to be on our team again from last year. And she's been number one in the world a few years. That's what we have. So we have experience with her. We have Vicky Duvall, who's coming up. So they'll be playing doubles. And they played very well together last year. And Liesl's kind of the captain, you know, of that doubles team when they're on the court. And then we have two new guys, Frank Dantsevich, who's a really great Canadian player, and then also Marcelo Melo. I have to think about it because I get it, can do it reverse. He's from Brazil. He's in the top five, and he's been to the finals of Wimbledon. He's 6'8". He loves backgammon. You know, he's a great guy. He's very soft-spoken, but he's so rangy, being 6'8", with long arms, and that's fantastic as far as covering the court in doubles. And you know, one step one way, one step the other, he's helping. He can probably cover three quarters of the court. And then Dantsevich plays doubles for Canada when they play Davis Cup. So we're really happy with everybody. We may bring in a wild card, which means they can play a few matches. And we have Azarenka, who's on our team, who's going to be playing one night, and she's actually the opening home match on the 15th of July. So I hope everybody comes and watches the last 2 weeks of the season, because the first week of the season, we're only 3 weeks long, so you've got to make sure you come and watch. Yeah. It's a long it's a much longer than most tournaments, though. And we're going to be on the road. We're going to have six matches on the road before we get here. And I'm going with the team to every...
Well, I was wondering about that.
For the first time, I'm going to go every single
match. And watch every game?
Every match. I'm going to sit on the bench, because otherwise I never get to watch.
And are you a
quiet... Shaking hands, worrying about the fans, worrying about the sponsors, you know, our partnerships that we have. And I'm going to do that before the matches, but then during the match I want to really watch this time, because we want to keep developing our team. We want us to bring a championship back to Philadelphia. We won in 2001 and 2006. So we want to win, and we want to do it for the community. And another thing that's important to us is being in the community 365 days a year, like with Hunting Park as an example. We do clinics. We have 10 and under leagues, freedom leagues. We're doing all kinds of things to get kids to exercise, be in our sport. We've given over 350,000 rackets in World Team Tennis and continue to give them out. We're the first ones that really step up and do that in a big way. Vitas Gerulaitis had that idea. I don't know if you remember that name. But
I do, indeed.
He's passed away, unfortunately, but he was the first one back in the... I helped him. In fact, I remember the first clinic he did in Brooklyn or wherever, and he's from New York, that he said, we got to give him rackets. And I thought, gee, that makes sense, because most of these rackets are too heavy. So we've got these smaller rackets for the kids.
I was trying to sort of imagine you watching these players play. Are you a quiet watcher? Are you one with your heart in your throat
No,
as
terrible.
You're watching?
I always tell
are
people
you yelling and screaming?
I tell people not to sit next to me.
Are you shouting at the ump? Or?
No, not so much at the umpire. I just try to help them. I'm always helping a player hit every ball better and do better. And if you have a personal interest, it's really tough, you know, because I do love coaching, and I do help some younger players, and quite a bit. We actually help younger players. Well, we just do it. They find us, and we help them.
Well, I would think also putting a team together, you want a certain kind of style of play that fits, but also
chemistry.
You want a kind of a personality chemistry, I would think, as well.
Yes, you do, but you have to remember we have a draft, just like the NBA and the NFL. You don't always get exactly what you want, so you've got to be adaptable. Right. As they're going through the draft, there's a couple of minutes between each pick. Whew, does it get tense. We were very tense because trying to get who we wanted. Right. We pretty much got who we wanted, so I'm thrilled, but he was getting down to the wire on a couple of things, and we got lucky.
What do you like as a coach? I mean, how do you coach players? What's your approach to coaching?
I coach by asking a lot of questions.
Oh, interesting. Like what kinds of questions?
Why do you play tennis?
Oh.
Why do you play?
Why do I play?
Yeah, why do you play?
I play tennis because I love that feeling when I hit the ball right. My backhand is better than my forehand. When I hit the ball right, it just feels so good.
Doesn't it? We
it
were
does.
Just talking about that before the show. You weren't around, actually.
No.
We were talking with a group. And it was that's exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah,
I was. The same thing. That's the right reason I love to play. But I always ask youngsters, why do you play? Because it gives me an insight to where they're coming from. Mm. If they say right away, it's fun, it's this, then I know we're okay. If I get a child who has to think hard and long, I know there's
usually... For the right answer, perhaps?
Well, there's no right answer, but there's a feeling of they're doing it because they want to, or there's a feeling they're doing it because of somebody else. Mm-hmm. So that gets you at least understanding them very quickly, a start. Mm-hmm. And that's very important. So I ask a lot of questions. I think telling stories are fun, way to learn. So I might tell them an old-fashioned story and say, oh, but you guys hit so much better than we do. But, you know, there's a story or some fun thing that happened. And when you have a team, funny things do happen. There's no question. Whether you have Fed Cup, Davis Cup, which are international play, Davis Cup for the men, Fed Cup for the women, and then, of course, with us, Milan World Team Tennis is it's exceptional because we have both genders, and I like that. I like both genders. If you watch a World Team Tennis match, you see my philosophy on life. It's men and women working together. Everything I do, I've been known as a women's person that fights for women's rights, but actually if they really know me well at all and know my history, I've been labeled that, but that's not who I am. I'm really for both genders. I grew up with a brother who played for the San Francisco Giants.
He's a pitcher, right?
He's a pitcher, good slider. They're very good. Done your homework, and then he's a great guy. But I just think we're in this world together, and we need to work together. We need to, more men are in power. We need them to change because they're the decision makers. We need corporations to step up, equal pay for equal work, because it takes government longer to do things. I think it's up to businesses to make it right.
And we're almost up in a break here, but I guess the idea of seeing then men and women together on the court.
It's fantastic.
Working together, negotiating together.
That's fantastic. They jump up off the bench when the player changes ends, and they're in there together. It's really great. It's the way I want the world to look.
Look like a tennis court, right?
Yeah, well, now that's our stage, right?
Indeed it is. Well, indeed it has been your stage, Billie Jean King. Let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. And yes, our guest is Billie Jean King, owner of the Philadelphia Freedoms, co-founder of, it's really Milan World.
Yeah, Milan, yes.
Milan World
Generic
Team Tennis.
Pharmaceutical company.
Oh, okay. World Team Tennis. And she won 39 Grand Slams, I think 20 titles at Wimbledon. And we are talking about how she approaches tennis. And we also want to talk a bit about her observations of tennis today and, of course, her career both on and off the court. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking with tennis legend, tennis great, Billie Jean King, and again, the owner of the Philadelphia Freedoms. Their season starts in July. In fact, their first away game of the season is July 6th, and then they'll be playing at the Pavilion at Villanova University from mid to late July. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. It's so interesting that you ask players, why do you play tennis?
That's usually the first question.
Yeah, which I think is a fascinating question, the more I even think about it. But having watched that American Masters piece on you, a documentary on you, it seems like for you it was a kind of love at first sight. There was something about picking up that tennis racket that seemed to just be what you wanted to be and do what you wanted to do.
Well, some of it has to go with my personality, who I am. And when I used to be in fourth grade, they give you that recess within the classroom, like for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And you couldn't leave, but you could read or do whatever you wanted. Mm-hmm. I'd always go up to the to the class at the head of the classroom where they had maps, and I'd pull down maps, and I'd say, God, I want to go to China. I want to go to these places. I want to go here. I still haven't been to China. I want to go to Africa. I want to go to Europe. I want to go to Russia. I want to go to Canada. I want to go to South America. I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to go. My dad's a firefighter, and we can't afford to go any place. We're just starting, you know, we hadn't even started to go out to eat yet. So I'm thinking, that's not going to happen. And one thing I love is history. So when I started to get involved in tennis, I read right away on it. When Susan Williams, actually, who lives in Philadelphia, yeah, is Catherwood's her last name now. She's married and has two boys and men and a grandchild. And she buys a box, for instance, to the Freedoms every year. And I love telling the story when she's around because she's in the audience. I tell them how I got started. She asked me, you know, Susan asked me, do you want to play tennis? And I said, what's tennis?
I had not a clue. Even though you come from a very, very sporty family.
I know, but we were team sports. Basketball is my first love. Baseball, my brother playing, like I said, with the Giants. And then he wanted to be a Major League Baseball player by the time he was 10. I wanted to be number one in the world in tennis at 11. And I'm almost 5 years older. Thank God there's a little bit of a gap there.
Yeah.
And so you're right, though. I absolutely loved it, but I read all the champions. I knew that they go to London for Wimbledon. I went, whoa, now we're talking traveling. See, and I memorized in those days. I had every year memorized. I looked up the U.S. Open. It used to be the U.S. Nationals in those days. I learned all their who won this, and I love history. I'd read about all the players. You know, I just read Alice Marble. I mean, I just loved them. I read two books over and over. I Always Wanted to Be Somebody by Althea Gibson, who was the first person of color to play. She was our Jackie Robinson in our sport, and she went on to win major championships in her late 20s. I love that book. I always wanted to be. So I slept with that book, and then Tennis with Heart, Doris Hart, because she had a very tight, wonderful relationship with her brother. And now looking back, I understand why I love the book, because I'm very close to my brother. You know, it's just like projection. It was about myself. But I had those two books and my tennis racket and everything on the bed, and then I'd always read. I love biographies. So,
but it sounded like you loved hitting the tennis ball, obviously.
That's the most important thing, because I loved hitting the ball. Anything with a ball. My brother and I, our third word after mom and dad or mommy and daddy was ball. We both would say, ball, mommy, ball, daddy. You know, like, get all excited and ball, ball, ball. So they'd throw it on the ground. I get all excited. I get to throw it. I'm all excited. And then I'd have my dad would throw the ball, and I'd hit it in the back. Well, I didn't have really a backyard, but what was it? And he would throw it, you know, he would toss it, and I'd hit it, because I wanted a baseball bat, and he wouldn't get me a baseball bat because, you know, he says, I've got to see if you really like it. I said, damn. So I'd go out, and I'd hit. And then finally he said, okay, you've earned it. I'll go get you a bat.
But in this American Masters, when you said, you know, I want to be a tennis player, your dad said, or maybe your parents said to you, well, you have to raise the money to go buy your first racket.
I said, Dad, Mom, can we go get my first racket? And they said, no. My dad says, how much do you want it? I said, no, I really want it, Dad. He goes, show me. You know, like, show me the money.
Yeah.
He says, show me. So I went to all the neighbors. I got lucky. We had a great block of people, and nobody made very much money, but they all gave me dimes or quarter, maybe. It was a big deal. And I saved, like, I don't know, it was either $8.29 or $9.28, and I'm a little dyslexic, so I don't know which one anymore, but up in the cupboard in a mason jar, I saved the money, and then I couldn't wait any longer. I was just like, Dad, Mom, can we go? So we went to Brown's Sporting Goods in Long Beach.
Get your first wooden racket,
he says,
right?
Wooden, of course. He goes, what do you want? And I said, what is this much money buy? And that's how he said, well, I can help you there. And of course, I chose it by color. Because it's wine or lavender, and that's my favorite color, purple.
A purple racket.
Oh, yeah, purple strings, purple handle, purple throat with a little bit of white. I'm sorry I turned it in. I turned it in at the rec park where I got instruction from Clyde Walker. And they upgraded it because Clyde said, let's go get you a better racket. So they upgraded the rackets they had they gave out as rentals. And I had to put my racket in to get it. And, of course, when you're at that age, you don't think, oh, later in life you'd like to have that racket.
You know, there are many things I love about the way you play tennis, but I love the way you would hit and come to the net. I mean, you don't
Yeah, but that's surface. No, but the surface dictates that and the speed of the ball. So there's so much more power in the game.
Yes, true.
You can't chip and charge. You'll get past left, right, and center. It's not that easy anymore. So that's why we don't see it. And the strings are more important. The rackets, they're more dynamic. Their bodies, their head is still. It's like a still head because you see the ball five times better when your head's still.
Oh, interesting.
And then, but you want a very dynamic body if you look at the players today. Watch the great ones. Just watch their head, how still it is, but watch how dynamic their body is. We used to hit about like from 180 degrees, and now they go more than 360 when they hit the ball.
Yeah.
That's why they can hit so much harder as well. Their kinetic link is much better. They're much better connected than we were. We're more arm. The way we're taught was very static. It's much more fun to hit the ball the way the kids do today. And they hit
so much power. It's
they're
unbelievable.
So good. But the strings and the rackets, just all these things, you know, contribute. But the way they play, I mean, they're amazing. And physically, it is so demanding. I mean, I thought it was demanding when we were playing. It's nothing compared to today.
Well, and I mean, it'd be interesting to sort of, you know, take the Billie Jean King of the 1960s and 70s and put her up against a Serena Williams and see what would happen.
No, we wouldn't do well at all. They're so much better. Now, if I could be born today, I'd be a much better player.
Right.
It's all you can do is be the best in your generation and then move on and be happy for the next generation. It's like a parent wants their child to do better than they did, and that's basically how I always think about passing the baton to the next generation. That's why I quit at 60 being Fed Cup captain. It was time to pass the baton. People get greedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy your wins? I mean, you have so many. And
probably not enough.
Oh.
Because we're always having meetings off the court, always trying to change things. It was very demanding off the court. So I would say tennis was probably pretty secondary. And I didn't probably enjoy my victories enough.
And were you someone that would beat themselves up over a loss? Or
Say what? Total.
Just
Chris Everett and I totally the same.
Shots.
Chris Everett and I used to talk about this all the time when we were when we were playing. Oh my God, we get so depressed. Oh, we're like crazed. I think Steffi Graf used to go to bed for 3 days after when she had a horrible loss. Yeah, we hate losing. Champions hate to lose. The pain is unbearable. It's horrible. Oh, I can't stand it.
Even to this day,
I can't stand it. I understand. I would probably be. I know I'd be the same. I'm a perfectionist, which just can be painful. I've gotten better, not much, though. Everybody around me must think, oh, God, you know, we're going to have a day with her. It's going to be tough.
Well, I'm curious about even the voice in your head, whether you are berating yourself. When you were playing, are you berating yourself on the court, or are you speaking positively to yourself?
I have two sides. I would berate myself, but in so doing, I'd think very positive thoughts. It's like I say, are you kidding? That is so bad. Or, yeah, it's a joke. And I get really tough on myself. But the other part of me would chime in like, let's go. We can do it. I can do it. I can do better. It's like, let's go. And so it actually ended up being a motivator for me. And for a lot of people, that would not be a motivator. I would say I was the one percenter.
They could sort of have both these conversations.
Yes, and my brain goes fast anyway. So I could, I'm the kind of kid if, I change ends and you're a coach and you coach me and you can give me a textbook, the whole thing.
Yeah.
By the time I walk from the umpire's chair out to the baseline, I will have filtered what I think's important. And I love doing that. That's fine. Give me whatever you got, and then I'll figure it out.
And that's Billie Jean King, our guest in this hour of Radio Time. She's the owner of the Philadelphia Freedoms and co-founder of Milan World Team Tennis, and of course had many wins and some losses in her tennis career.
Lots of losses.
But she doesn't like to talk about that.
Okay. No, I can talk. No, the losses is fine. You learn from winning, too, though. I want kids to know why they win. That's another question I ask. I want them to spend a lot more time on why they win. And I wanted them to really spend a lot more time on self-awareness and their strengths and their weaknesses, and make your weaknesses adequate and keep practicing your strengths. Mm. And I think people tend to think, oh, they only learn when they lose. It's not true. If you really will sit and reflect of why you won is what I want you to remember, and hit the enter button. You know, our brains are like a computer. It's whatever we feed, it counts. So why did I win? You know, why am I winning? What makes me who I am? And you always want to keep your strengths, mm-hmm. no matter what field of endeavor it is.
I was reading, I think it was 2007, Wimbledon finally gave out equal prize money.
Four majors in 07 did.
And all four
Wimbledon
majors.
Wimbledon said okay, and then 2 weeks later, the French followed suit. They were the last ones. So in 07, both of them did it because Wimbledon announced it before the tournament, way before the tournament. And then the French were shamed into it because they're the last one left. Because the U.S. and Australia was already doing it. The U.S. did it, gave us equal prize money in 1973.
Really?
It took from 19... Really? Well, we started in 68, But it took from 1973, well, 68 really, but 73 was the first one, to 207. That was a long haul, and we worked behind the scenes all the time. Venus Williams was part of that. She stepped up and went to meetings, went to the committee meeting at Wimbledon. I think she's the one that changed. Wow. From what Larry Scott, who was our Women's Tennis Association executive director at the time, said she changed it. She really went to this meeting and had them close her eyes and imagine.
But what a real victory. I mean, you spent many years both behind the scenes, but also...
Yeah, way behind. I mean, I was trying to push Venus forward on it. I've been always mentoring she and Serena because they were on my Fed Cup team, like when I was the captain, the U.S. Fed Cup team. So for 6 years or so, I had time with them. And Zena Garrison was the assistant coach then. And they're very coachable.
Oh, interesting.
Very. Oh, no, they're fun. Of course, I met them through a World Team Tennis Clinic out in California because I'm from Long Beach, and they were living out near there when they were 10.
When they were young.
When they were 10. And
so you
they
saw
always remember
out.
This Team Tennis Clinic, and Venus tells that story all the time. She plays for the Washington Castles. She tells that story to the kids. I heard her, overheard. She didn't know I heard her. And she says, you know what? Milan World Team Tennis gave me an opportunity when I was a kid at a clinic with Billie Jean, and now it's my turn to give back. So all of our teams in Milan World Team Tennis definitely do work, you know, in the community all year long. That's our job. It's not just winning championships for the city. It's to be a fabric of the community as well and to make a difference to the community and to the future generations. And that's what we want to do with the Philadelphia Freedoms all the time. We always have we have a lot of freedom tournaments, leagues, all that. We're trying to get them to be exercising for the health of our nation as well. And tennis, as you know, Marty, because you're still playing, is a lifetime sport. So if we can give a child the gift of tennis, then we've done it. But I just hope people come out and support the team because we've got a great team this year. We've got Azarenka that first night. We're back on the 15th playing. We've got the players are really excited. You know, we're communicating with them all the time. You know, we're texting, emailing, and they're getting all ramped up.
Right.
You know, to be like a family, because that's what we want them to be, feel like their family. We want to go for the championship. And Josh, our coach, has already put that in their heads. That's what we're going to go for. And they're all getting pumped up as each day gets closer and closer to the start of the season.
Well, I'm curious, and then I do want to get to some callers, and we have some Facebook comments as well. How would you prepare for a game? Was there a certain way that you would physically?
Every player has their rituals. Everyone.
And what was
yours? Do you have yours?
Oh, God. I could use some rituals, actually.
Well, might help. Sameness helps.
Right. I do have a thing where I do bounce hit, because my brain is all
that
over
works.
The place.
Inner
just,
tennis.
Yes.
Tim Galway.
Yes, exactly.
I love
so
that.
So I do that, just because...
That's a great one to use.
To sort of control my mind. But no, I just... No, I don't have any... What were yours, though?
Actually, bounce hit works. I give...
Work.
When kids are warming up and they can't get their timing, I definitely... That's the one I suggest. I say, I don't care what you think. You figure it out, but here's a possibility. And... I found that I couldn't pack my bag the night before. I always forgot something. I had to do it in the morning. I was very big on, like at Wimbledon, I had to have a certain cubicle.
Oh.
They didn't have showers in those days. You know, they only had baths. So I was like, oh, yeah.
They had baths. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God. I had to bath. And so I didn't want to go in that cubicle. I had to have the same cubicle.
Right.
One year at Wimbledon, I ended up wearing the same dress because I felt like it was my lucky dress. Right. Poor Ted Hengley, who made my dresses, he was dying. He's like, oh, Madam Superstar. That's my nickname.
Yeah.
Madam Superstar, I've got 7 dresses for you, one each match if you win this. And I go, this is the one. I can feel it. It was the last year I played, you know, won the singles. I said, I can just feel it. He says, okay. What a waste. I said, I'll wear them in the doubles, I promise, in the mixed. So I did, but I was just, you know, you get these little idiosyncrasies going.
Well, especially I think if you're playing as a single player.
Like Betty Stove wouldn't step on the line.
Oh.
Oh, except when I said, what about when you're playing? She goes, oh, that doesn't matter. But if you see her come off the chair,
yeah,
you see her step over a line, step over another line.
Oh,
what a crack up.
Yeah. We have a Facebook comment. This goes back to, what is it, 1973 when you played Bobby Riggs. She said, did Billie Jean King eventually become friends with Bobby Riggs? Or were you friends even before this
matchup? He was one of my heroes because, of course, he was former number one player. So did I read about him? Absolutely. Did I look at old film if I could find it? Yes, in those days you couldn't just go to YouTube or whatever. And we did become very dear friends. And I talked to him the night before he passed away. I was going to go see him. He wouldn't let me see him.
Oh.
I had a car all organized to go see him in the San Diego area, and he said, "No, I don't want you to come." And then we talked the night before he passed away.
Wow.
He finally understood we made a difference because he kept thinking about the money, and I kept saying, "No, this is about social change. This isn't about money." We had that big argument going on before the match, and I told him I'd never play him again, even though he wanted to play again. Of course, he lost. And he said, "Let's go play again." I go, "I told you I wouldn't. This was about history. This was about making a point. This was about protecting Title IX. This was about all. It was about social change. And protecting Title IX was very big to me at the time. I didn't bring it up much in interviews at the time. I probably should have, but I didn't. I tried to keep it pretty. I didn't want to get into a lot of controversy that I just wanted to stay focused, and I wanted people to be good to each other. But people said, "Oh, it's boy against girl and all that." And I said, "Yeah, but it brought everybody together, and that's what I like."
But was he the male chauvinist pig that he sounded?
Oh no, he was a pig, but he was a great pig because he was honest. I like male chauvinist pigs that are honest. Don't come to me. Oh, I'm not like that. Yeah, yeah.
But women should stay in the bedroom and the kitchen.
He's a riot. I used to say, "Ugh." No, I think he was old fashioned. That's fine. Yeah. But he was honest about it. I don't like guys that try to act like they're one way and they're another. I've got some very dear show and his friends, you know, and it just is what it is. I mean, some guys will tease and go, "Oh, it's my birthright," and we just laugh. But it doesn't matter. We both know each other's opinions, and you've got to allow room for other people's opinions.
Well, I have been hogging the conversation. We're going to take a very short break and get some callers and some more comments into the conversation. Again, Billie Jean King is our guest. She is the owner of the Philadelphia Freedoms, co-founder of Milan World Team Tennis. And the Freedoms will be playing in Philadelphia at the Pavilion at Villanova University from mid to late July. The first away game of the season is July 6th. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Billie Jean King. Just a few of her accomplishments. She won 39 tennis grand slams, including 20 titles at Wimbledon, and instrumental as an advocate promoting women's tennis and equality both on and off the court. As we've been talking about, famously beat Bobby Riggs in the 1973 Battle of the Sexes. The first female athlete to be awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Co-founded World Team Tennis and is the owner of the Philadelphia Freedoms. Let me get Carol from Kennett Square to join our conversation. And Carol, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Okay. I'm just so excited. I just got off the tennis court, so when I turn my radio on and I hear Billie Jean King, it's like, wow. And I hopefully will be helping out at the Freedoms match. I named down the volunteer, so I hopefully will be there. But I have a question because I have this argument with my son. And, you know, because he knows, like, I support a lot of women's issues. And he says, well, you know, women aren't as good as men. And he says, look at tennis. Women don't even have to play more than three matches in the Grand Slam.
Yeah, three sets.
Three sets.
And that's my question. I mean, what do you think
I can answer that easily.
Yeah, Carol, go ahead. Go ahead, Billie Jean.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. No, go ahead.
The best men will beat the best women. There's no question. We've never said we would, ever. It's because of androgens, testosterone, etc. There's no way you compete with that. We don't have that. The guys do. And it makes them stronger, although leg strength, we're about equal usually if you have the same girth and all that. But upper bodies is a very big difference. But for instance, on the ground strokes today, women are hitting it's almost the same speed off the ground as the men.
Wow.
It's when it changes is on the serve and overhead, they can hit harder. They have bigger hearts than we do. So they just are better than we are at playing. The reason We are very happy to play 3 out of 5 sets. They don't want us to play 3 out of 5. It makes the programming too long. I've been saying that we should get everything 2 out of 3 sets. It's too long anyway.
For men as well.
Absolutely, because it's it's wearing them out. But Carol, how was your tennis?
Yeah, how did your game go?
I picked up tennis when I was 45.
All right.
Never played sports, so it's been a long haul for me. But I was on the court today with these ladies who were in their 80s, and these ladies can hit those shots. They can place those balls.
That's great.
They may not be running, so when you say a life sport, I absolutely love the game. I'm not that great, you know. I'm like a 3-5
Doesn't matter.
Player, but
3-5 is great. That's very good.
I love the game, and I appreciated all your comments, especially Marty when you were asking, well, what do you do to prepare for, you know, a match? And of course, that's always a big thing, you know,
breathing.
Getting ready.
Breathing is another one.
Well, you know what, Carol? Only because there are a lot of people that want to talk to Billie Jean King, I want to thank you for calling in and actually say goodbye to you.
I'll see you this summer. I'll see you in July. Thanks for volunteering.
Absolutely.
With the Freedoms.
Someone had a question I had as well about some of the grunting and screaming that you hear from, I guess, Maria Sharapova is probably the most obvious example. What do you make of that?
That's why they were taught to exhale. Monica Seles was the first one to do that. And the boys do it too. The girls and the boys do it. But the boys have a lower. It's lower. Uh-huh. And we are taught through, well, broadcasting, etc. We are used to listening to deeper voices.
So you
we
think
just are. And so that anytime it gets a higher pitch or whatever, I think people don't like it because we're not used to it, and we prefer something a little more mellow. But it's loud. It's tough. And they're actually having the juniors not be allowed to do it. So the next generations coming up won't be doing that as much. So because we're going to have something o-meter. Loud-o-meter, or whatever, grunt-o-meter.
Grunt-o-meter.
Yeah, whatever.
Let me get Tom from Doylestown to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have Tom? No, we don't have Tom.
Tom, okay. Where'd you go?
That's all right. Do you think, and only just because a couple little comments, including one you said to me right before the show began, do you think women are too self-critical?
Yes. We heard Carol.
I did. She said, I'm not that good.
I would say, and I'm included in this, I'm not excluding myself, we always make, like, I'm not any good, but. Guys don't
I'm
do
only
that.
A 3.5.
Right, I'm only a 3.5. It's like we're always apologizing who we are. It's very interesting. Why not just say I'm a 3.5, I love the game, I've been playing since I'm 45. And Carol, it's just, we all do it. It's amazing. We're always saying sorry about everything. It's like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. Our self-esteem is rough compared. Guys don't talk like that, even if they're feeling it. Team tennis, sitting on the bench with the guys all these years. I mean, we're in our 39th season this summer, okay? I've been either playing, ownership, or a part of it for 39 years.
Wow.
And I've learned, and also I grew up with a brother. It is amazing, outwardly, how we act. And inwardly, we're so much alike in some ways. But the guys know how to bluff it. They've been taught culturally how to act and how to handle. And girls are also taught culturally how to act stupid and say, I'm no good. It's like we're taught this culturally. It's amazing, and we fall into it. I catch myself all the time. Of course, I am 70 now. I am a product probably of 50s and 60s, but yeah. I hear young girls do it. And I'm like, no. We've got to stop.
I remember years ago interviewing a soccer coach, and I think he had played men's soccer, and then he started coaching a women's team, pretty well-known coach, and he said the first thing he had to get over were the players, and these were high-level players, apologizing for making a mistake.
Correct. And here's another thing that happens. There's a hierarchy in men's everything. So if you're on a sports team, they know that one of the guys is the franchise player. Done. No problem. If there's a woman superstar on the team as well, or a franchise player, and the coach maybe says something in front of everybody, she will go later to the coach and say, please don't do that anymore. We're all a team. We're all in this together. Please don't say anything about me. Even though she is the franchise player, the superstar, just like the guy is on the other team. And the guys accept it right away. That's great. You know, Joe Blow, he's the guy. And the women, they're always so worried about their relationships, and they can't make decisions sometimes. Everything's so collaborative to a point that eventually someone has to make a decision.
Let me try Tom again. Tom from, looks like Doylestown, joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air.
thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just called in to thank Billie Jean King on behalf of my daughters, who are grown now, but who grew up in a very different world, thanks to your efforts and the efforts of a lot of other women. My daughter was my oldest, was born in 83, and this 10 years after the Battle of the Sexes, and she grew up in a world where women's sports were taken seriously by themselves and by other people. And I'm sure there are barriers, but the difference, it was mind-boggling, the difference in just 20 years when my wife was a fabulous athlete at Central Catholic in Allentown.
Wow.
Played basketball, and the girls were considered too delicate to actually run the entire court.
I remember those days.
Half court.
Well, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
You probably remember that, right?
Yes,
I played it.
Totally. Well, Tom, let me take your comment.
Thank you, Tom, because it's very interesting. And did you see the King-Riggs match, Tom?
Did you see the match?
Excuse me?
Did you see?
I did.
How old were you when you watched it? Do you remember?
I was 24, and I was rooting for you.
Oh, I like you. You're great, man. You're the right dad to have daughters then.
Well, I'd like to say that, I was a feminist back then, but I've discovered that I had a long way to go even back then, but I just thought Bobby was. I mean, I thought he was mostly a showman and a little bit of a knucklehead, and I just liked him getting his comeuppance. And I think he kind of liked it too, to be honest. But he certainly needed it.
Yeah, well, he had a good sense of humor. But Tom, yeah. I really appreciate your kind words, and I appreciate it. It makes it like all worthwhile when you hear stories like that.
Because it's nice.
It's very interesting. I get men like Tom quite often coming up and they'll have tears in their eyes and they'll say, I saw that match and I have daughters now, just like Tom. That message I hear, that story I hear often, that they said because of that match, not Tom necessarily, but I raised my daughters differently than I would have if I had not experienced that. I mean, President Obama was 12 years old and he said...
He watched that.
He watched it. Now he's got two daughters. He's so thankful he saw that. It's very interesting how not only did it shape women's lives, because I went, for instance, a couple of days later, I was at the Philadelphia Bulletin, which we don't have anymore.
No, we don't.
But I walked in, and everybody got up and clapped and got all excited, and they all ran over to me, and the women were saying, we've been wanting to ask for a raise for 10 years, and we never had the courage, and after you beat Bobby, we went right in there and asked for that raise. And I said, well, more importantly, did you get it? And they said, yes, it worked, because they started to realize as a woman, you have to want to ask for what you want and need. And it's okay. It's okay. It's the other person's responsibility to respond to it, not yours. So it's amazing.
But, certainly what you're talking about reflects the pretty dramatic changes when it comes to women in sports. But I'm also thinking of part of your life as well is how things are different for gays and lesbians in this country. I mean, for instance, last week, Pennsylvania became, I think, the 19th state to legalize same-sex marriage.
Cha-ching! That makes me so happy.
Well, what do you make of all that?
I think people are waking up. I think social media has helped. I think it's been a real grassroots movement. It's been one by one over decades, and you look back to what the pioneers had to go through and people, it's just, I can't imagine what people felt, say, 100 years ago, what they had to go through. And then each decade got better. There's still a long way to go, but the important thing is not to have to catch yourself when you're prejudiced towards anybody for either color, sexual orientation, abilities, whatever it is, you never want a human being to be discounted for who they are, ever.
You kept your husband's name, King.
I did. It was easier. People knew me by that. Right. And actually, when Larry and I got married, he wanted to be a Moffat. He didn't want to use King.
Oh, he wanted your last name.
Yeah, because he was real feminist. And I said, what? I said, I like King. I was very old-fashioned then. I said, no, I like Mrs. I like that. And he goes, no, Moffat's great. He said, King's so common. But Billie Jean King's shorter, and I've got three names, which I think. And everybody got to know he's Billie Jean King. And I didn't want to go through changing documents. Oh, my God. It's like 20. I checked into it, and they're going, Billie, don't. I said, okay. Because I was very happy with King. And,
yeah.
I have
are you
brothers,
friends with him?
Yeah, I'm friends. In fact, his two children are my partner, Ilana Kloss, and I were godmothers of them. And
oh,
we've
really?
Got, we've got other kids, too, in the world. Some, a couple in Australia, a couple in London. Rosie Casals is also a godmother, the ones in London. Because the mother was pregnant in 1968 when we were all in Stockholm, and she showed her the godmothers. So it's like we had, even though we don't have children of our own, we have a lot yeah. of children we're in touch with. And, of course, I think teaching, I love children. I get along great with them. Tracy Austin said I should have had 10 children.
Oh, really?
If anybody knows
but
who Tracy
have all
Austin,
these
she,
students.
She
sure.
was the youngest number one ever at 16. She's yeah. great. She and I get along great, but she's also from Southern California. I've known her since she was 3 or 4 years old. She did a report the whole 9 yards. You know that stuff. It's, boy, she's funny.
Let me get one more caller on, and we have, it looks like Chris from Newtown Square joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Chris, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Hi, Billie Jean. This
Hi.
Is Chris Beck.
Hi, Chris.
We go way
Hi,
back
Chris Beck. How are you? I've been asking
good.
People how you are. Who are you,
we
Chris?
We played your tennis on grass courts, of all things.
Yeah.
But I, as you know, I was involved and still am with National Junior Tennis League, which is team tennis for kids on public courts. And I just want to thank you so much, Billie Jean, for what you're doing at Hunting Park. It is the area that's so in need of everything possible. And it's just great because you're going to open doors for kids in so many ways. And it's just great for all you've done there and for tennis. Great to hear you on the air.
It's great. So you're well. I hope I get to see you soon. So we go way back. Oh, boy. Chris Beck and I go back
how
to junior.
How far back do we go?
Junior tennis?
Junior tennis.
Oh, absolutely. She's been so instrumental in the tennis community forever, ever since she was playing. Then she's always given back to the community and a lot from the National Tennis, well, it used to be League. Arthur Ashe and Charlie Passerelle started it, and now it's called Tennis and Learning.
Oh,
a lot of places,
nice.
And Legacy is what it's called here in Philadelphia, and they do the programming. They're responsible for the instruction at Hunting Park, and we've helped. We've all helped in our own way. The Middle States, which is the section here, they gave money. The USTA, through them, gave money. We've given money. Legacy's doing the programming. So it's been a real tennis community effort to get Hunting Park on the right track and to make a difference in that community, and it's starting to happen.
Chris, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And we're almost out of time here. And I know it's been many, many years, or maybe not so many years, since you have competed, but do you miss that at all?
No.
Just the
Day after I retired at 40, the very next day I was in the World Team Tennis office. Well, I wasn't the next day because I was in Australia, so I had to come home first. But I was 40, and I knew exactly what I was going to do because I love team tennis for what it is. If you watch a World Team Tennis match, like I said, it's my philosophy on life. And, you know, we've got great people like CTCA has really been stepped up for us, and Lincoln Motor Company. And I'm going to see how that Lincoln parks itself, because I'm going to sit in there. I'm going to, like, I'll get one of the kids with me in the car.
Yeah,
come and sit with me. I'm like, how can I not do the, you know, like, steer it or whatever? The car's going to be right at Villanova inside. It's going to be there. And remember, if it rains or doesn't matter if it's too hot, you guys, the match will happen.
Well, Billie Jean King, it's been such a pleasure. And I'm rushing you here because
That's
we
right.
want to play the Elton John song.
Oh, the song.
Philadelphia Freedoms. It's been a great pleasure having you with us on Radio Times.
You.
And thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Marnie. Thank you, Elton, for writing the best signature song a sports team could ever have.
Let's take it.
Be a rolling stone, you know. If the cause is right, I'd leave to find an answer on the road. I used to be a heart beating for someone, but the times have changed. The less I say, the more my work gets done.